Hello and welcome everybody to the Pick Six podcast. We are all now 2024 quarterback prospects for Nebraska. Sam McEwen along with Elvin Bland and Tom Chattel. Hello everybody. Gentlemen, welcome to mid-May.
Are we all dual threat quarterbacks? Or are you guys going to stay in the pocket?
I'm a pro style.
Okay.
And Tom's tall enough to see over the defenses.
I thought Railo was dual threat in that he could have brought other players with him.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? he's Georgia bound, and is anybody surprised by that? I know some people yelled at me on social media about it. I wasn't. I thought it was kind of a long shot in that I thought Nebraska was probably third in a line, but who knows? We're all guessing. The kid knows, and that's about it. I go back to people. I thought, well, he'll do what his dad did. He'll go to Nebraska. No, his dad chose Nebraska because in 1998, Nebraska is where if you wanted to win Outland trophies and national championships, you went to Nebraska. If you wanted to go to the NFL, you went to Nebraska as a lineman. Okay, that's what Dylan's doing. He's following his dad's footsteps. Exact same footsteps, only that school is now Georgia. It's not Nebraska. So, kids of that level of that stature really don't want. They very rarely go start programs. They go where they can win and be the guy right away, and get on the Heisman list, Heisman train, and it would have been a gamble to come here, because in order to be that kind of guy, to win the national championships and play for those kind of things not going to happen here, in the next two or three years. So he would have had to wait, in any case. He would have really had to love Nebraska to come here. So, he did in fact follow his dad's footsteps. But like I said, in today's world of transfer portal, if it doesn't happen today, stick around. You never know what might happen down the road.
Yes, that is that's absolutely true. We're going to talk about that more about Dylan Raiola here in a second. We'll also talk a little bit about Tom's. The first part of Tom's conversation with Ted Carter, NU president, also really knows sports. I don't know if that's always been true of the NU president or even an interest of the NU president, but it's true in this case. We'll also talk about Nebraska baseball, maybe a little bit about Nebraska basketball. But let's get back to Dylan Raiola. So obviously he picks Georgia. He commits to the Bulldogs. I thought he would go to USC. I think what I've learned since I thought that is that they like the Georgia coaching staff more. I think that'd be the word for it. I think they like Kirby Smart. I think they like Mike Bobo, who's the offensive coordinator there, former Georgia offensive coordinator, former Colorado State head coach. They've got some other quarterback guys that are around that. Georgia really supports that position. I mean, they've just got a lot of voices in there, people who are attuned to the development of the position. And so I think Dylan Raiola really warmed to that. I think Nebraska is – put its best foot forward. The question for Nebraska, and we'll get to this in a second, I think, is whether or not they spent too much time on recruiting Dylan Raiola and what they do now, because he's not coming to Nebraska. And so, Tom, you had kind of mentioned that you thought, well, Raiola did what his dad did effectively by picking the best program. Simultaneously, you think Nebraska needed to put in the energy that they did to try to get him. And that there's nothing wrong with finishing in second place.
Not at all. Right out of the gate for Matt Rhule to show up and get Raiola re-engaged. I mean, he was out. He wasn't. Nebraska wasn't in.
Right.
And he brought him back in. That to me made a statement. And then showing the world of college football and college football recruiting that yeah, we have a connection here, but this is the kind of guy we want. We're going to go all in, regardless of whether we've been going to bowl games or not. This is a new day. I just thought it, the energy they put in, and you know, getting him here, and you know, getting some people's hopes up. I thought it was a hell of a statement, and I think it's they did put some other things on hold, some other quarterbacks.
But again,
it made the statement that this is, you know, we're going to go after these kind of guys, and we're going to get them eventually. So. No, I don't think it was a lose deal at all for Nebraska. I thought it was a win, in that sense. So that may be a hollow victory for some, but they wanted them. But you know, maybe there's some guys now that who might come back around. I mean, there's one in town here.
Daniel Kalen, who plays at Bellevue West, committed to your alma mater, Missouri, and committed, in my opinion, pretty quickly. Like, I think he did over the winter, really before there was any sort of, you know, settling of things. Most quarterbacks who are, you know, top 50 quarterbacks in the country have already committed. And so it's not uncommon for somebody to commit in February. That's when Kalen did it. You know, he obviously, Nebraska was interested, but was not going to take a commitment from him so long as Dylan Raiola was sort of out there. And he committed before Dylan came back for A, the basketball game, you know, where he threw the bones, and I think they beat Minnesota, and B, the March 30th visit. And so, like, at that point, I don't think Nebraska was, like, you know, in a position to say, yes, we will absolutely take your commit in mid-April. As it turns out, I think Nebraska knew probably within 2 or 3 weeks of his visit in March. Yeah, looks like he's going to Georgia. So I think there was, had they been able to give Kalen a date certain of saying, if you hold off until this day, we think we'll be able to give you a definitive answer, maybe they would have been able to do something. But of course, you can't tell a kid that, Evan, and you can't, it's not so easy to be able to just, you know, keep a kid on the line. And here's the thing that I think is most true. Maybe 10 years ago you might have been able to, but it doesn't work that way anymore in Omaha. You don't just keep kids on the line. Teddy Rizek, you couldn't keep him on the line. Mm-hmm. Notre Dame offered him. He committed to Notre Dame silently. Then Nebraska offered him. And when Nebraska called him last Thursday, Teddy told me, I told Nebraska, I already committed to Notre Dame.
That's a strong statement. And like,
he wasn't going to wait.
And that's fine. Like, I, you know, that's fine. And I agree with you, Tom. Like, you got to shoot your shot. Like, that's a guy who, by all accounts, could have changed the program. You don't get him. It's not every day you have an in, multiple ins, really, with the top quarterback prospect in the country. And, you know, it was a high reward, low risk venture, in my opinion. Okay, you miss out on Daniel Kalen. 5 years ago, that might have crippled your quarterback recruiting. Now you just go back to the portal next spring. At the worst, you go back to the portal and you add a guy. It's not a huge deal.
The timing of it was all wrong for Rule. I mean, Zane Flores would have been a guy you wanted as well. It just, everything was awkward, and you know, the previous staff wasn't getting him and going after him and such. Did they wait too long on Rizek? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you would think if the staff were in place a year earlier, they would have known about him quicker and offered sooner. Sure, I think that's fair to say. I mean,
could they have offered in January? Or?
They had a lot going on in January.
Yeah, but maybe. In any case,
yes. Yes, they could have. I think that's a reasonable point. And at the end of the day, I think what they thought was going to happen. It's reasonable to consider this, is Boston College is going to be his best offer till he comes and camps with us in June, and then we'll decide whether we want him or not.
Right.
And Matt Rule got beat by his former boss, Al Golden, who is his boss at Temple and the former Miami head coach, came in and fell in love with Teddy Rizek. He was there to look at Caleb Benning, and he was there to look at Christian Jones, who is a 2025 prospect. Says, oh, let's see this guy too. He sees that guy, and he's like, oh, my. And then Notre Dame knew. They knew, we got to get him on campus now. We have to do the whole thing now. If we want this guy in our class, we got to move now. They did move. And Nebraska was just a little too late. And you know, Nebraska almost gave him like a ceremonial offer of like, hey, we like you too. And, you know, you can go back and forth on whether they should have done that.
For the record,
I think it probably was okay to have just passed on it because, you know, whatever. But they offered it, and then the next day he committed, and there you go. Like, that's the way it ends up. But Nebraska has to be on top of all of its evaluations, and it's not going to be easy as it relates to quarterback play. Kalen, I think it's going to be hard to get him to come away from Missouri now. I think he's been committed to the class for a while, and Missouri's done nothing wrong. And Missouri hasn't played a game. Now, if Missouri goes 3-9 next year and they fire Eli Drinkwitz,
I think that's a situation that is going to change.
Do you think Missouri's going to be any good next year?
Not great. And the SEC East keeps getting better, and they are not getting better. I mean, not at the level of like Tennessee or even Kentucky right now. They passed them by. So
they went 7-6 last year, right?
Yeah, they barely got into the bowl game. They lost. But I just feel like he's at the point where he's got to do something better than what he's been doing, which is just scratching around trying to get in a bowl game. So. But it's hard in that league. He is a quarterback system. So it's a quarterback friendly place. You're going to throw it a lot, but they do have other guys too. So I think that's a situation. I'm not saying it's going to change. It certainly could change. If you want to keep an eye on that down the road, fine. I just think it's fair to maybe start judging this staff on Nebraska recruiting starting in June with the camps. I think maybe you have a period when you get hired of kind of finding out the place. You know, you can't argue with their effort. They're, you know, and Ed Foley, you know, Jersey Ed's back on the road, man. He's back on the diner circuit. And He's all over the place in the state again, second time around, where other staffs didn't have a first time around.
Even hopped over the river to Sioux City.
Well, but the hard work pays off. I think that there's a grace period for guys like Rezac. Okay, maybe the first few months of the time you're here, you know, guys get away. Maybe you don't know who they are yet. It's hard to offer if you don't really know them. But I think starting in June is when, okay, they've got to lay the land now. They kind of know who's who. And now we can kind of start judging them on the in-state recruiting, I think, starting in June.
Well, you know, they've got a quarterback coming in early June, Kamari McClellan. He's going to visit. I don't know. I mean, he's a dual threat for sure, more one threat maybe than another. He's got to improve as a passer, in my opinion. So that's a guy they have coming in. They could look at a Carson Rahner, who's at Elkhorn South. You know, I don't think he's a Power 5 scholarship guy at this moment, but I think, you know, could you cultivate that frame? And you've watched some of him. And could you cultivate that frame as a walk-on? Yeah, that's possible. Or something like that. But more than likely, you're going to go to the transfer portal. Unless, you know, I was looking at Missouri's schedule, and what I'll say about Missouri's schedule is, after they play South Dakota and Middle Tennessee State, they got to go play Kansas State. That's at home, but they're probably not going to win that game. And then they play Memphis. I don't know anything about Memphis. But they're crossover games in the SEC. So their SEC West games are LSU. They're not going
to
win that.
I'm going to that game.
In Arkansas.
Yeah. Who is it? LSU and
LSU and Arkansas. They play Arkansas every year.
Right.
But their crossover games are LSU and Arkansas. And there's a moment during the middle of the season where they play LSU, Kentucky, South Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, Florida, and Arkansas. Mm. All in a row.
Mm.
And that's hard. I mean, you could see Missouri going 4-8 next year. Nebraska could too, but the point being that there might be an avenue for maybe a coaching change or something like that. The Big Ten West going into next season, so going into 2023, 6 of the 7 teams will start a transfer portal quarterback. And I believe I am correct in saying they will start a new transfer portal quarterback. Jeff Sims at Nebraska, Cade McNamara at Iowa, Tanner Mordecai at Wisconsin, Hudson Card at Purdue. I don't know the guy at Illinois' name. I don't care. And Ben Bryant, the Cincinnati quarterback at Northwestern. I can't remember the guy at Illinois. I can't. It's not Tommy DeVito because they wouldn't let him play another year.
Right.
It's some other guy. The only team that has a homegrown quarterback, and by that I mean like a guy they recruited out of high school, is Minnesota, and he's no Gray Shakes. I mean, he was okay, but this tells you something about what teams are doing. It's like if they can't develop a guy right away, they move on to the portal, and some of the names that I just rattled off are pretty good football players. Kent McNamara is a good player. I mean, he will make Iowa better, no question about it. And so, you know, like I think that's true. I think you can just go to the portal. Because there's probably a 4-star out there that's worth grabbing, and Nebraska might get Logan Smothers back. There's no question that the door was left open for that by rule. He didn't say the name, but I mean, he said,
Who else are they talking
about?
Did
all that? He did all but say the name.
Yeah.
So you know, I think Nebraska's quarterback issues are fine for the next couple of years, but Dylan Raiola would have made it an interesting conversation if he had committed here. No question. He's super super talented.
I thought the national conversation was interesting, too. I know The Athletic wrote about it and maybe a couple other outlets, too, just about how it's hard to break out of the status quo. And I think there was my sense from the national coverage out there was people were kind of rooting for Nebraska because that would have been a cool story. Dude comes home, tries to resurrect a program, and instead he goes to the football factory, and it sort of is what it is.
Because it's possible that he won't, again, two things can be true at once. A, he can be an elite quarterback. B, him being elite won't win them any more games than they already would have won. They didn't lose last year, and they had Stetson Bennett. Now, granted, he was drafted. I don't think Stetson Bennett's the next Tom Brady. You know,
sure,
like
right.
Alabama's had some also-ran quarterbacks that won national championships, too. Georgia won its national title not because of Bennett, but because of everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so Raiola could go there, be elite, a tremendous player, and they don't necessarily win more games because he was there.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if he goes to Nebraska, I don't think there's any question Nebraska wins more games because he's there. Flip side of the coin, we always said that was going to be true of Adrian Martinez, and it really was not. Other flip side of the coin, Dylan Raiola is a better passer than Adrian Martinez by some margin. We need to be clear about that because I've heard people make comparisons there, and I'm like, Adrian's a hell of a runner, but he at no day has he ever had Dylan Raiola's arm. Mm-hmm. Raiola's got a 75-yard arm. He's pretty. He can throw all the throws. I think he's a guy that's going to flourish wherever he goes. He's going to be a 30-touchdown guy. So we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens. Elsewhere on the recruiting front, I know we talked about this about a month ago, and then I've kind of been all over the place on this, and I was like, I don't know if they're doing that great of a job, like. Or if this is going as well as they thought it was going to go. And then they got a couple of commits.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was from a guy that they were going to get. I mean, his sister goes to school there. And then the other one was McGahee, which I guess was a little bit of a nice surprise. But the other guy was going to Nebraska. He just hadn't committed yet.
Yeah,
and he decided to do it once he came on the visit. I'm kind of back in the... I'm curious to see how this thing's going to go, Camp. Because I don't think it's a shoe-in that they're going to get either of the Bell West kids.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to have to battle for that. I think they're going to have to battle for Caleb Benning. They're going to have to battle for Pyfrom, although I think they've got a good chance with Pyfrom, unless he really wants to go to Penn State. And if all three of us can suggest, Tom, you wrote this in your column yesterday, you want them to play at Penn State every other year? No.
Yeah, I do. I think the way to go is, and again, it's not about us driving.
Well, no, it isn't.
Along the lonely roads.
God bless you.
The deer hunter.
That's right.
It's not about us. It's about if Nebraska could have a game on the East Coast and the West Coast
good
every
point.
Year.
Yeah,
on national TV, a big time game. Yeah. I think you got to do it.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought of it that way.
And that's how I see it. And I think Rule, being the Penn State guy, and if they're going to recruit Jersey, they're going to recruit the East Coast. Mm. It gets him into Pennsylvania, where he's a homeboy. He speaks the language. He can get players out of Pennsylvania.
Right. That's a good point.
I just think Nebraska has more history with UCLA and Penn State than anybody in the Big Ten. They have no history of anybody in the Big Ten.
That's a good point.
They have great history with Penn State and Nebraska. It's a great game.
Oh, I want UCLA all the way, no question.
And I think you're right. The fans would go, whoa, wait a minute. But I just think it would help recruiting to have that game. And you're gonna win your share if he gets the program up. When the program is back up where it should be, he's gonna beat James Franklin at home. He's gonna get his share. They were doing that. When Bo Pelini was here, they were beating Penn State. So, and then they could beat UCLA. So
beat them 3 years in a row.
I just think they're not going to make USC Nebraska and every, but they might give UCLA Nebraska some. Okay, here's one, and that gets you into California. Again, it's you're on both coasts every year. Maybe every other year you go one way right. Or east. But again, it's not for us. It's for the program.
Nebraska has a 4-1 record against Penn State since joining the league.
Right.
That's fascinating to me. So the point being, if Kalen Pyfrom wants to go to Penn State, you either want to go there or you don't want to go there. But I think they have a chance with him. Carter Nelson? I mean, he's going to visit Georgia.
Yeah, he's gone quiet.
Well, he's going to go visit Georgia.
He is going to go visit Georgia.
Yep. I mean, how do you say no? Like, if you want to be an NFL tight end, Georgia's going to be able to say, and here is this guy, and here's the guy, here's Brock Bowers, and who else do we have over here? We have Dylan Raiola in the club. You know what I mean? So like, Nebraska's going to have to battle for him. I do think Nebraska will win that, but I don't think it's a shoe-in. There are no shoe-ins left.
No.
If they were shoe-ins, they already would have put their shoe in.
Wow, very good.
Yeah, I know.
You know, I'm going to have a story this week on Malachi Coleman, and one thing that I was curious to hear about from him was how Nebraska was able to close the gap so quickly because, he decommits from Nebraska after the previous staffs let go. I mean, Deion Sanders is calling him. Georgia wants him, and he ended up at Nebraska and committing to a staff that he didn't know like a month before he committed. And so, he talks about relationships and attention to detail and sort of the collective staff as opposed to liking and trusting maybe one guy on the staff. But like, that's to me exhibit A, if you want to be optimistic about what Nebraska can do with some of these other guys, is what they did with Coleman and sort of that team approach. I think that's where, the guys that are heavily recruited, like the Bell West kids, like some of these top Omaha prospects, like, they've been through the process enough, as had Malachi and his family, to know kind of where the BS was and where the authenticity was. And I feel like that could be an area that Nebraska and Rule, because they're all so simpatico, could have an advantage is closing the gap with some of those guys. But
I think that's possible.
You know,
I'm just saying that, like, nothing's a for sure shoe-in of the names I just mentioned. And then, they're making offers again to get, again today with 2024 receivers in Texas and California. Mm-hmm. So they're casting a wide net. And, I think they're going to recruit all the way up until the day of signing day in December. Like, I think this class is going to be put together. It's going to be tireless effort all the way up till, which means I think they're going to get some good football players. But it isn't going to be this, hey, we got 15 by the end of July, and so now it's about picking and choosing. I think there's going to be a little bit more of, we got irons in the fire, and one of those irons is going to come out, but I don't know if that iron's going to come out until like December 7th.
Yeah.
Well, December 8th.
Well, I agree. Like, it feels like their slow start in part is reflected by the fact that they were in the NFL this time last year. They weren't building relationships
That's
with these
great
guys
point.
2 years out. And they have a history of finding guys late. We just saw it in the last cycle, even with some of the players that they brought in.
Like, can I add a third thing to that?
Please.
A lot of these guys have not recruited at this level.
That's true.
And that doesn't mean they're not going to be great at it, but we have to be honest about that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Satterfield has, and Tony White has. But, like, because some of their position coaches have actually not done that at this level. Like, they're learning how to do it. You can't just say, well, you know how to do it. Like, you have to learn, right? Like, and so some of them are kind of doing this for the first time. Even if they're getting paid a lot of money, some of them are kind of doing it for, you know, they're learning it. And I think there's a curve, and it takes more than 4 months. Go ahead, proceed.
My apologies. No, that's all right. No, I agree that there's the learning curve. There's the track record that they have at other schools kind of doing more with less. It's just, I think where they lack a track record in recruiting, they've made up for it with what they've shown about player evaluation, player development. And it just seems like, whereas 5-6 years ago, if the staff at the time missed, they were in oh crap mode and just finding bodies. It feels like at this point, at the very least, you miss on some of your top guys, you're going to find some late blooming athlete somewhere and develop them and turn them into something. So it just doesn't feel like there's this huge drop off where, boy, if you don't get your guys now, your class is a wash. And then you couple that with the transfer portal and how that can help you plug those gaps. And it just, I think 5 years ago, you'd probably worry if Nebraska was in the spot they are now, but in the current climate, like, it's just, I think it's going to turn out okay. I really do.
Well, I think it's going to turn out okay, sure. But what they want it to turn out better than okay.
Because it's their first full class.
Well, but they want it to just be like, they want it. I think that the message I keep getting, certainly from Trev and Rule and when they talk, is we cannot afford to be good. We have to be great. Everything has to be really, really good. If you're going to get back, because to get out of this rut, it takes, and then get out of the rut like permanently, it's going to take year after year after year, good years, like stacked on each other.
But isn't the path to that doing what they're doing, getting some maybe little less heralded guys? Because you're not going to get the top end guys, as Dylan Raiola just gave us an example of. You develop the middle, kind of the high potential guys, yes. You start winning, and then you stack on that. Like, I think it's unrealistic to think that they're immediately going to get a top 20 class just because, hey, there's a new coach here, and he's in the NFL.
Although Scott Frost did in his second year. That's true. 2019, top 20 class.
Sure.
He did?
It's just it's a different...
He got one deal.
It's a different landscape, yeah.
It is a different landscape. I agree with you. It's the savior coming home versus... The savior didn't work, and this 5 years of losing. But I'm just, again, facts are facts. They are. Scott Frost failed in many ways. I'm currently doing a deep recruiting review on the 2019 and the 2018 classes.
Great stuff.
Yeah, it's taking a while. The 2019 class had football players in it. Not a lot of them left, but Jude. I mean, there were some players in that, including Wandale.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a saga behind Wandale that we'll explain another time. Anyway, I guess we'll find out what happens in recruiting. Let's move to baseball. Nebraska baseball is in the Big Ten tournament.
They are in the Big Ten tournament.
And the team that clinched that can still make the Big Ten tournament themselves, but they will not be ahead of Nebraska.
You're talking about...
Illinois.
So well...
Nebraska finished ahead of Illinois.
Yes.
But Illinois' season is over.
In league play, yes.
In league play. So Nebraska finished ahead of Illinois, so they can do no worse than Illinois...
Right.
Which can still make the Big Ten tournament in eighth, right?
They can. Yeah. So Michigan State and Purdue, they're 10-11. Illinois is done at 12-12. So Illinois could sit idle and miss out as if those two teams pass them by. More than likely, they'll probably make it as a 7 or an 8. Michigan State's playing a very motivated Indiana team. Nebraska, of course, is playing Purdue. So I think Illinois is probably going to make it, but... Yeah, it's kind of fun. I mean, Nebraska's in the tournament, first time since 2019. Of course, they didn't have a season in 2020, and 21 was league only. And there's, you know, 0.01% chance they win the league if everything breaks their way, but more likely than not, they'll finish as a 4, 5, 6 seed playing Omaha next week. Tom's excited about it.
It feels like a headline, and it shouldn't be, but because of those circumstances, I mean, but forget 2019. They're playing Ohio State. They beat Michigan, College World Series finalists that year.
Yep,
we didn't know at the time, but they beat Michigan on Saturday night, and then they're playing for the Big Ten tournament championship on Sunday, and then all of a sudden there wasn't a tournament. We had one last year. They weren't there. It feels like Nebraska's not even part of the event anymore because of all that. So. It's a headline, but going forward, it should be automatic. Evan, I just don't know. what to make of this season. Every time I want to trash it and say it's been an average, mediocre season, you know, they've got some, say what you want about the Big Ten, and it's not great, but they have some good Big Ten weekends. They won 2 out of 3 in Michigan. They went to Maryland, and they were in those. They won one of them. But I feel like they were able to hit the ball there. They come home and, yeah, they lose to Minnesota bad, but they win the next two by like three four touchdowns. Then they sweep Penn State, which is what you have to do. I feel like they have a chance next week, but I don't trust them because they don't. They haven't been there. They have these incredible letdowns where they don't show up, and that's not Will Bolt ball. That's not why he was hired. So there's something going on in the program, and I know it's the pitching has been up and down a lot. That's got to get fixed, but I feel like they're just in a weird place because I feel like the Iowa thing was a total disaster. But, you know, before that, like I said, they go to Michigan and win 2 out of 3. I thought that was a good weekend. So they've had their moments.
Yeah. I mean, they've won 5 of their 7 Big Ten series. They could have beaten Maryland 2 out of 3. Iowa, as you said, was everything went against them that weekend. I guess I feel like what's reared its head, maybe a little bit more accentuated from what we've seen in past years, has just been there's not a lot of depth. And that's you see that in the midweek. Like, if you don't have a fourth and a fifth starter, those midweeks get really tenuous and ugly, and Nebraska goes 6-6 in the midweek this year, which is really average, below average.
If they'd gone 9-3,
yeah,
they would be 32-17.
Mm-hmm.
Would they be on the bubble or no?
It depends on what those losses were. Okay. If they had lost to Kansas State, that wouldn't hurt them as much as losing to Omaha and North Dakota State have. So it would depend, maybe, a little bit. But it also turned out that their non-conference schedule wasn't nearly what they thought it would be. They thought South Alabama would be good. They stunk. They thought San Diego, which was a regional team last year, would be good again. I think they're sub-500 or fighting right around 500. So that didn't do them any favors either. They stunk in the midweek. I still think that they have the potential to make a run in the Big Ten tournament, if for no other reason than they have star power.
They do.
That's better or on par with anybody else. Bryce Matthews and Max Anderson, and I still put Emmett Olson in that group. I think he could get drafted pretty highly in July. Like, they have the guys, they have the talent, and
they'll have the crowd.
And they'll have the crowd, yep. They had a little players meeting last week after beating, or before they beat Creighton, after they lost the suspended game, and then after the next one that kind of lit a fire. So who knows? Like
he doesn't be. He doesn't.
That suspended like game is 3 weeks. Just, yeah, it kills me.
You like that?
I mean, you show up with bases loaded, no outs, and you lose the game. I mean, it's. I don't know. I people are gonna. They're gonna get mad at me for bringing this up, and maybe I shouldn't, but. Do they need to play Omaha that many times? I guess midweek you do. I mean, they don't. It kills you when you lose to them because number one, you lose it. You know, and Omaha's a good program, but you know, you lose to Creighton and Omaha, your RPI is it hurts. And so, I think they should play Missouri more. I think they should get them on a schedule every year, whether it's midweek or a weekend or something. You know, as an SEC team, it at least helps your RPI a little bit. And I know that they've always played KU and K-State. There's not a lot to do to work with around right. for that. But it's just amazing. But I watched Missouri on the SEC channel on Sunday. It swept Georgia. They came from behind and went in the ninth. And guess who had the winning hit?
Cam Chick. Big hit. Yep.
I saw that. I'm going, holy cow. But wouldn't that be a fun baseball series for Nebraska?
Yes.
I think they would come up here and play them, too.
It'd have to be midweek, unless they got them on their bye week or something.
I agree. But still, it's a five-hour drive, but I think it'd be worth it.
Yeah.
Nebraska's name, and we can talk about this more another time. Nebraska's name in baseball still travels far enough, in my opinion, to get them in some fairly prestigious baseball tournaments, right?
Like they will next year.
Yeah.
So what's with the let's go play South Alabama and San Diego? What is that about? Is that about the 1 year when Nebraska baseball was maybe like the 20th best team in the country, but they went 29-30 because Darren Erstad overscheduled, and they live in fear of that? Or is it?
You're saying why did they not schedule tougher this year?
Why don't they just play really hard teams? Oh, again and again and again. Like, what would be the? To be a very fair comparison, that's what Nebraska softball did. Now they're in the NCAA tournament, and they're like 34-20. But that's what Nebraska softball did, and they got beat quite a bit. Like they lost to not Alabama. They lost, I think, to Arizona and Arkansas and Wichita State twice and Oklahoma State twice and Virginia Tech. But they beat Texas A&M,
mm-hmm.
and they beat another team. I think they beat Arizona. They won two of them, and I think they went 2-8 in those games. It wasn't brilliant, but not one of those games hurt them. Not one.
Right.
And every one of them helped. And at the end of the year, I think everybody was like, oh my goodness, what are they going to make it in? They did make it in, and they didn't go to Oklahoma. I thought they were going to make it in, and they were going to send them to, you know, Jordan Ball and Norman, and they were going to be in a lot of trouble. Now, as it turns out, they're going to Oklahoma State, and they're playing a harder team in the first round. Wichita State's really good. They're like actually like a top-10 team. They're just whatever. They got screwed in their seeding. So Nebraska's got to beat them, and I honestly don't think they will. But they're in the tournament because they scheduled really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen this bite Nebraska women's basketball too. Like at times they haven't scheduled hard enough or whatever's happened. And like, why didn't Nebraska baseball just play those teams over and over? I think those teams would have played Nebraska, wouldn't they have?
Probably. I mean, they went to like Frisco in 2017. They had the TCU series last year. Like, they schedule, they had Vanderbilt and Ole Miss this year. So, like, they usually pick that one weekend. I know their scheduling philosophy is you pick the big weekend, and then you sort of kind of pick, try to be strategic, kind of like they did with South Alabama and San Diego, try to find teams that'll help you, but maybe won't, you know, they're not quite as overwhelmingly talented as, like, an SEC team. And I know that there's, especially at a colder weather school, there's a fear. And they're going to put this to the test next year, is coming right out of the chute against some of these top Southern teams. You get steamrolled if you haven't even played outside before that first weekend. And sure, that's going to be a challenge for them. So, like, they're trying to balance between, yeah, you want a schedule, but you don't want it so hard. And it's going to have to be played in February and March when you're still getting your footing, that you're buried and your confidence is shot and all this. So, like, it's kind of a tough spot.
You
need to have a better schedule than they had this year.
Fair enough.
I think this is a people in the Big Ten certainly don't want to hear this, but they have to agree. I think when Dave Van Horn was certainly that good, but I think when you're in the Big 12, you have to try harder. The standard has to be higher. You know, you can't have a pitching staff that doesn't, it has to be there all the time. The defense has to be there all the time every weekend. You've got to show up and you've got to play well. I don't think that's the case in the Big Ten. I think the Big Ten is solid. It's got some good teams, but the level of play is not as high every weekend. And I think over time that erodes a program.
Right.
When you're not asked to be at a certain level ever all the time.
Mm.
And you've got to be wired. You've got to be different. You've got to be a program that is above that.
Mm.
I think that's is it why they're, I don't know, but it's certainly, I think, when they were in the Big 12, they had to be there, and they had to go to that tournament, and but again, you're not asked to, you don't have to be perfect to get in the NCAA tournament. I feel like in the Big 10 you have to be almost perfect to get there.
Well, we've talked on this podcast before on the football side about what Urban Meyer did for Big Ten football and raising the standard and kind of bringing everyone else along. I wonder if there'll be a smaller version of that in baseball when UCLA and USC join the league in 2 years. I mean, those are proud baseball programs that are going to come in that are not going to think less of the sport just because they're in a different league. I'll be curious to see if that kind of raises all ships a little bit there. Or if they get caught up in the other way, too. I think that'll be fascinating.
Is USC Are they that kind of program?
They're a bubble team. Yeah.
Yeah.
UCLA, of course, has been a national, the number one national seed.
Yeah, I see UCLA definitely. I don't think USC has not been that kind. But you know, maybe they're on the way back.
In women's basketball, it took about 7 years, but it happened. Maryland steamrolled the league for like 4 or 5 years when they came in, Maryland being a Final Four team almost every year. They finally figured it out. You know, other teams in the league adjusted. Ohio State was the first team to adjust. And then Iowa got this girl named Caitlin Clark.
Mm-hmm.
And that changed it. Now, Caitlin Clark was going to Iowa. It, you know, that's by proxy of living in Des Moines. She could have gone anywhere, but that changed it.
Right.
When Iowa got Caitlin Clark, Ohio State was already there. Indiana's kind of getting there too, but it took like a long time. And what it really took was a transformational player. So it's going to take UCLA could come in and beat the crap out of this league for 6 years, just like people thought Nebraska was going to do, but Nebraska didn't do. And why didn't Nebraska do it? Because they waited 3 years too long to fire a guy that should have been fired the minute they had a losing season. And the reason that he wasn't fired is because the guy that was the AD at the time liked him. And that there was a decision made there that set many things back, in my opinion. Like they were set up, and the last 2 years of that guy's tenure were so dispiriting. I mean, they were losing 26-10, and team players weren't competing anymore. They lost some of their best assistants. And they just UCLA's gonna come into this league and they're gonna just mow it down. You watch.
Maybe. It could be. They have a lot of travel considerations, though, too. And when they show up in, you know, State College in late March,
sure,
as opposed to going to Stanford or Oregon State, that's a totally different deal.
22-2.
Okay.
How's that?
I don't think so.
Well, hey, maybe I'm wrong.
I think, yeah.
22-2.
Okay.
That's what they'll do.
Mm.
They'll just pummel the league. To be clear, if that happened, it'd be the best thing for the Big Ten.
That's what we're talking about.
It'd be great
about.
For it.
Yeah.
They need it. Like, Urban Meyer came in with a team that was on probation and had nothing to play for and went 12-0. And everybody looked around and was like, holy shit.
Well, and he had a different attitude. He wasn't just happy to be in the Rose Bowl. I mean, it was like Darth Vader. He wanted to absolutely beat the crap out of you every week. And that, I think, turn some heads. I think USC, in a different vein, doesn't have that same mentality. But I think that they're going to also do what Ohio State did. I think Big Ten football is about to get another shot to the head. Here comes USC is going to be at that level, and then you know Jim Harbaugh. Say what you want, but I think the guy's always been a good coach. Now he's got a little something going, and now he's got to deliver it again. He's got to beat Ohio State at home, and he's got to go back and into the playoff. But they if they ever won a national championship, that would be a game changer. I just think the mentality is going to change again, and the time is right with the 12-team playoff in a couple of years for the Big Ten to change. The Rose Bowl is going to be diminished, and that's why I'm so intrigued by the Big Ten football scheduling right now. I think it's really interesting. How will they set it up?
We'll know by the end of the month.
The commissioner is a TV executive, and it's going to be a TV show, and but it doesn't make it bad. A TV show can make things better. You know, you want to get on TV. You know, Big Ten's always been kind of equal, spread out, but they're going to put the best teams on, and they're going to get favoritism. USC is going to be one of them, and so if you want to be in that club, you got to be better. So we'll see if Nebraska can if they can up their game right now. The timing can be very good.
We're all journalists, so we cover the games. But if you had to pick between the three, just thinking of the TV productions and whatever. And yes, I know UCLA isn't very good in the Pac-12 this year. They're 11-14-1. I get it.
It's all good.
But if college football, would you want Fox in the morning, CBS in the afternoon, or NBC at night for your marquee Big Ten football game? because that's how it's going to be set up. Fox in the morning, CBS in the afternoon, NBC at night. Which one?
I don't like morning for any big game. Right. No, I don't like that for any big game.
Okay.
Although OU Texas seems to always work. 11 a.m., if everybody wants to just, you know, destroy each other at 11 a.m.,
mm-hmm.
we would have a giant corn dog.
Michigan, Ohio State.
Yeah, that seems to work. I don't know. I mean, I'm used to college football now on every hour of the day and every night of the week. I don't know that it matters. I think it's the game now. I can make the time slot. The time slot used to make the game. I think now it's. Mm. I think we see games at all times of day. So. I'd take night over afternoon. Personally, some of the SEC games, I always think it's better at night than a game's bigger at night under the lights than it is at, you know, the CBS, SEC, Tennessee, Florida, 2:30. Eh, okay. It's a good, you know, if it's Alabama playing somebody and everything's on the line, I'll watch, but. Maybe the 2:30 CBS game, the theme song is great, but to me, a game's bigger at night.
Yeah.
Now, some of those games, you know, Nebraska used to play all their big games at 2 or 2:30. The Oklahoma game was always right in that slot. And I will say this, talking about the lights, the 2:30 game would always end around 5:30, 5:45, or 6:00. And the dramatic moments, the climax of the game, here we go, it always happened under the lights. It was dark by 5:30 or 6:00, so it seemed like a bigger deal. So I will say sometimes a 2:30 seems like it was time for my nap. But by 6 o'clock, it's and I do take naps. By 6 o'clock, the lights are on. It's kind of fun. So answer your question. I would go night. And the other two, I don't really care. I mean, it has to be the game.
Sure.
If it's, you know, Wisconsin, Purdue.
I'll 11, give you the announcers then. Joel Klatt and Gus Johnson.
Yeah.
Brad Nessler and Gary Danielson. And Ian Eagle's son, Noah, and Todd Blackledge. That's the NBC crew. And Catherine Tappan, who's really good. She's a sideline reporter. And then Jenny, I can't remember her name, Jenny Taft in the morning, the sideline reporter. And then I don't know who the CBS, maybe Jamie Erdahl or somebody else. I don't know. Anyway.
I mean, I want to give Fox credit for its Big Noon campaign. Like a few years ago, that was pretty controversial, if you remember. Like,
right.
You're going to put your biggest game at noon? And they've done a really good job of sort of zigging when everyone else is zagging and maximizing their ratings there. So I think they've done a good job with that, and it sort of plays into this pseudo college game day vibe where they have their people there, and so that's pretty cool.
I, as a
guy who covers the game, I like the earlier game because we can actually, you know, take our time a little bit more with some of that stuff. But if I'm just a fan watching, I mean, it's hard to beat the 7 o'clock kicks and under the lights. You think about all the big games in college football. I mean, how many of those were under the lights
there aren't,
and people storming the field? I'd probably go night, noon. 2:30, just from a I'm watching on TV consumer point of view.
Yeah,
there aren't enough difference making announcers anymore that I pay attention. I to me, a lot of them sound the same. I do think the Fox guys are the best. But what I'm seeing, and I'm going to watch this a little bit. Maybe it's just me. I'm kind of worn out on ESPN game day. I'm not as into it anymore. And now that they're moving one of their key people to Fox, the bear, the gambling guy.
Yeah, he's going
and
to Fox.
If Fox turns in more into the gambling show, you watch out. I think that would be the smart play. So I don't know if he's going to bring everybody audience over. I'm just kind of worn out by the game. I just feel like it's not fresh anymore. It's not must-see like it used to. And what will they do with a lot of the Big Ten games that they aren't showing?
BTN.
Where they emphasize those. I mean,
yeah.
Oh, right.
ESPN yeah, Game Day. I'm sorry. So,
I don't know.
But yeah.
Good question.
So,
there's still a playoff. So
The Big Ten needs to be shaken up a little bit because those. Yeah, on all the ESPN partners, the 11 a.m. You know, game day ends at 11. He puts on the head thing. You know, Corso puts on the mascot deal, and then we go right into the Wisconsin Purdue on ESPN2, and on ESPN is this Vanderbilt versus Ole Miss, or then we go to ESPNU and it's. You know, Iowa versus Northwestern, or maybe Nebraska versus somebody. It's just like, just so vanilla and so plain. And these are the games that people are on TVs and sports bars and places where people are tailgating and getting ready to pump up for the big games. And it's like nap time. So, I just feel like the Big Ten never did itself any favors with these early 11 a.m. games.
Right.
Because it was just so boring. They had punt, you know. It was, you know, I was waiting for the Big 12 games to start where all the action, all the people scoring touchdowns left and right.
That's right.
And so I just feel like the Big Ten needs to be shaken up a little bit. And I think USC is perfect to do it.
I agree. I think if NBC puts the same energy into their college football broadcast that they do their NFL one, they will be the best.
Mm.
And I was worried that Collinsworth's kid was going to call the games because he's not. But Ian Eagle's son, Noah Eagle's pretty good. But I think Klatt's the best analyst.
I think this NBC thing is something to watch. It's a game, it can be a possible game changer for the Big Ten in college football. It might, if this commissioner... If he plays his cards right, and I'm sure he's way ahead of it, it could bring Notre Dame into the Big Ten. If not, as a member, as a TV partner.
Right.
And if you get him as a TV partner, that's almost as good as having him as a member.
Right. That's
right. College football, Notre Dame baseball, whatever. Hockey, volleyball, fine. But you get football as part of a Big Ten Notre Dame package. That's what you wanted.
It's great.
And, and then they play each other, and NBC – is the one that perhaps brokers the deal along with the commissioner. So
that'd be great.
Maybe something I'll ask Ted Carter this week when I get to see him.
So you've had one half of a conversation with Ted Carter, the NU president, former hockey player, athlete, loves sports. You're going to have a column, I think, next Sunday, not this Sunday, but next Sunday.
Memorial Day Sunday.
So what do you think of just – You know, I know you like him. We all like him, but you got to talk to him a little bit deeper than we have.
He's so unusual. There was a chancellor at KU many years ago who was from McCook, Nebraska, Gene Budig, who turned out to be the president of the National League. I mean, big sports fan. The people at this level, the presidents, are not necessarily sports fans. Now, some of them are. But a lot of these guys don't know. They know who the head coach is, but they don't know where the practice field is. They know how to get to their suite. They know how to get to a bowl game and go to the parties. And they like to show off their team to the other presidents. That's why they give the coaches so much money. But they don't really pay attention to sports. Nebraska has a president who loves sports and is involved heavily. Totally trust him to be in the middle of all of this college football stuff because he's spent a life around college sports and he's played the games. He talks about his job as a president in terms of coaching and the team building. So it's fascinating. So I want to interview him and find out where all this came from. And the first installment started late because I went to the wrong address. I know where to find the football stadium. Unfortunately, I don't always know where to find the president. So, I got there late, and he was great. And we talked about him growing up, how he got into sports, how we got to the Naval Academy, and then the Top Gun, all the Top Gun stories, and including he was Tom Cruise's handshake before the movie Top Gun. They said, "We want you." Tom Cruise is coming into this movie. We want you to kind of show him around and so forth. And he did. And that he was Ted Carter was who got basically the first guy Tom Cruise saw in that movie. So, well, he wasn't actually in the movie. Anyway, just all these stories about, you know, trying to land a plane on an aircraft carrier in the dark. And if
good Lord.
I tried 13 times. If they missed, I mean, they were out on the mission basically watching Russian fighters and trying to, you know, just make over the Japan Sea, just making sure that they didn't come to near the aircraft carrier, which was the Midway, the famous Midway. So talked about having the, they tried 13 times and if they did, they were going to have to eject into the sea at 2 a.m. And if they found them, great. If they didn't, they were gone. just all these stories that are just amazing. And then that's where we kind of left it. So I've got a lot of Husker questions, a lot of college sports things to ask. I'll probably do some more Top Gun. I can't get enough of that stuff. So, he did say it was so funny. He said Tom Cruise was the greatest guy to be around, and he said he passed the swimming pool test. I said, "Well, what's the swimming pool test?" That's where you get thrown into the water with all your gear on, and you have to get out of the gear and up. Like if you get thrown in the ocean, you have to get out of your gear and start swimming. And he said he passed it right off. So. I love that kind of stuff. It's a lot of fun for, you know, this time of year.
Did he say if he liked which Top Gun he liked more?
We didn't talk about that, but I think he liked. I'm biased. The second was so much better. The second is one of my all time favorite movies. And
the one that just came out last summer.
Yes.
Yeah, it was.
It was good. It's a great movie.
It was good.
It's actually a great movie.
Yeah, it's good. It's
and.
Really good.
But
you can't. I mean, the first one's nostalgic, you know.
It is.
The second one was better. Yes.
Yeah, and part of it was, and as he said, they put the cameras inside the jets, whereas the first one they didn't. The second one, and the first one, they're like in a studio, where they're showing, you know, Iceman, all these guys, but the camera and the cameras and the actors were up in the planes and they. They were working the cameras while they were doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just love that stuff. But anyway, he's fascinating guy. The Top Gun president, Nebraska's president, is cooler than yours. I mean, he's like all the other guys wear stuffed shirts and don't know anything about football. This guy knows everything about sports, and I'm going to ask him. You know, why did you come to Nebraska? Of all the jobs,
right?
Why did you have to come here? I mean, he grew up in Rhode Island, Naval Academy, East Coast, San Diego for a while at Miramar. Why Nebraska? So that'd be one of the first questions I ask him.
That's a great question. You know, I maybe we've underplayed it, but he was a defining factor. In both Trev Alberts and Matt Rhule taking the jobs in Nebraska. I'm just telling you. And yeah, that's not a knock on Ronnie Green, but he was a deciding factor in Trev because Trev really got along with him. And they share a military, you know, Trev's son is in the military. And then Matt Rhule at that luncheon last week, he spent 5 minutes, and Ted Carter introduced him, which I didn't put in the story. I probably should have. So Ted Carter gets up there first and talks. And then Matt Rhule goes up there, and he's like, at the end of the day, he's like, my wife comes to me and says, how are you going to say no to an admiral? And, you know, I mean, Matt Rhule's good in that setting. He can play it up. But I've heard this enough times where I think Ted Carter is why Matt Rhule's at Nebraska. That's certainly a factor.
I'll tell you, Sam, it's so important for these guys. One thing I've learned about coaches over the years is, you know, they can all make money everywhere they go. Now it's every job's a good job. Every job pays. But who they work for is everything. Who's your boss, and does he have my back? And am I going to be able to get what I need? That is so important for a coach. It's the AD, but it's also the president above him. And for the AD, it's who am I working for? If it's Harvey Perlman, you know, there were guys who weren't coming here. There were AD candidates.
Right.
They were coaches. There was no way in hell they were coming here.
Right.
And so the president does set, he sets the tone. So I can absolutely see that, where you meet Ted Carter and go, he can talk sports. We all speak the same language. He's very impressive. He's not just some academician, you know, nut from a philosophy department. He doesn't know sports. This is a guy who is an athlete. He was a fighter pilot.
Yep.
And he's got a hockey stick in his office. He's got a Carney Loper's football helmet, full size. He's got all this stuff that he's going to show me when I go in there next time.
Yeah.
But that's why you go work for him, because he's like you. He's one of you. Trev Albert's athlete, Matt Rhule athlete. We speak the same, you know. He said, this is not a guy who's going to talk down to me and tell me what I should be doing. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who knows what I'm going to do.
Mm. Well, that is a good capper to our podcast for this week. I think maybe we'll be back next week. It'll be interesting, because Nebraska will be in the Big Ten tournament. So we'll try to figure out a time maybe to do that or not do that. Good luck to the Nebraska softball team. They play in the NCAA tournament this weekend. The Nebraska track and field team, congrats to them. They were the Big Ten champions. Justin St. Clair is coach of the year at Nebraska. There's no question about that. Anybody else can do whatever they want. That guy has got it going on. And so going out to practice and watching the best javelin throwers in the country all throw at the exact same time, it's really something to watch. And he's out there in his, like, you know, Carolina blue shorts and his shades looking, that's good. That's good. Like, it's interesting. We're going to do a story on Justin St. Clair and how he got all these throwers, and they're all kind of working out, you know, simultaneously. It's really interesting. But anyway, for Tom, for Evan, I'm Sam. Take care. This is the Pick 6 Podcast.